You are listening to the RTE Brainstorm podcast, proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Hi, my name is Ella McSweeney and this is Brainstorm. If you want to know about new ideas from the world around you, then this is the podcast for you. In order to come up with new ideas to tackle climate change and promote green transport, Bikehood proposes to create Ireland's first cycling neighbourhood. Dr. Gavin McArdle is an associate professor at UCD's School of Computer Science. Gavin, can you start by explaining what is Bikehood?
So Bikehood is a project, it's a research project that's funded by Research Ireland under this challenge of sustainable communities. So we're trying to make communities be more sustainable going into the future. And one thing where we see there is room for improvement is in transport and how people get around their neighbourhoods. It's built on the idea of a 15-minute city. And that's basically where everything in a city is accessible within 15 minutes. So think of the services that you use, access to medical care, access to shops, access to entertainment, and even access to work in a 15-minute city should be achievable by public transport or walking or cycling within 15 minutes. And that's all well and good in a city centre where there are lots of services. We want to try and take some of that to a neighbourhood, to a community, and allow people to access services close by.
So are we talking essentially about getting cars out of suburban and urban areas?
Exactly. It's to encourage people to use bikes or active transport or active travel, which is walking, rather than using the cars, as you said.
I remember when I was younger, near where my house is, just it felt like out of the blue, a new road was carved between two housing estates and there were no cycle lanes on it. Somebody somewhere had decided that was how things were going to be. And so that's how it went. And then there was, you know, more cars and all the rest. And I always remember thinking, God, who made that decision? Especially not to have any cycle lanes on it, but also who decides these things? So there seems to be a sort of top down decision making where the community isn't massively consulted about any of these things.
Exactly. So we want to encourage the cycling. But to do that, we see we need to bring the community with us and get their insights, their inputs. They live in the area. They know what exists there, what's needed and how they use the area. Currently, it's kind of a top-down approach. The local authority, the council have money to spend on cycling infrastructure. They decide where it goes. But we think that it will be much better to include the community in the design of the cycling infrastructure to create this bikeable neighbourhood, this bikehood, as we call it.
You're a computer scientist, so data is what you're after. And is it essentially like a large scale, what would happen if experiment? So you're getting this data and then you're imagining a completely different future for, I don't know, a particular town or suburban area.
So we're collecting data from the area and we're using the data to create what's called a digital twin. And a digital twins are used widely. They're used in industry, they're used in manufacturing, whereby you're creating a kind of virtual replica of a physical thing that exists in the real world. So we're using that in the context of a neighborhood. So we're creating a digital twin of a neighborhood, collecting data about where the buildings are, where the shops are, what the traffic volume is, how many people are using bikes, what the pollution, the noise level is, trying to create this kind of high fidelity replica of an area. And that all relies on the data coming in to build that replica. And we can do it as a snapshot where it's a one-off, this is a typical day, or we can connect to real-time sensors in the neighborhood or in the area so that the digital twin is constantly updating. And as you said, what that helps us do is provide information to communities, to citizens. So now we have this high fidelity replica of their neighborhood. We can start doing what if scenarios. What if we put a bike lane here? How would that change things? What if we close this road to cars? How would that impact traffic? But how would it impact on the environmental conditions such as air pollution or noise and things like that? So by providing this digital twin for communities to play with, essentially, it allows them to experiment with different things in their area around cycling infrastructure. And then take that to the local authority and say, this is what we want. And we've run the simulation, we've run the digital twin. If we put a bicycle lane here, we're going to improve, hopefully, the area for citizens.
Talk a bit more about the digital twin idea. I know I remember reading a bit about, I think it was a new medicine, and the idea that you'd create a digital twin of this medicine and the impact it would have for people who were ill taking it. And it was trying to make sure, quite frankly, the medicine was safe.
Exactly.
So is it used across a lot of different sectors for computer scientists?
I would say it's used in almost all sectors. A prime example will be Tesla. So for every car they produce, they have a digital twin of that car, which is collecting all the data and from the sensors in the car and kind of replicating that. It allows them to see things like if there is a fault occurring or if there is an imbalance in some way. And the digital twin is just a replica of the car but built virtually. It's used widely in cities as well. If you type any city name and digital twin, you're going to see some sort of incarnation of a digital twin for that city. And there's different levels of it. So a lot of cases, it involves just building a 3D model of the city on the computer. Realistically, a digital twin needs to collect the real-time data and be updated constantly to reflect the real world.
So in your case, without having to physically change anything, so instead of going ahead and just putting the bicycle lanes in, which is basically what happened during COVID in a lot of places, yeah. You run these simulations to see what, how far you can influence people, is it? And try and get people to advocate for this kind of change or what?
Yeah, to show people what can be in a kind of a low cost, low risk way. I mean, it costs a lot of money for the local authority to put in a bicycle lane that nobody's going to use. And then there's a risk there about how they're spending public money. But if we look at it virtually, we can see what would happen in a kind of a low cost way and imagine a what if scenario through this digital twin.
So what kind of data are you collecting and how do you get it?
Yeah, so there's some data obviously about the spatial makeup of the area, the location of the buildings, the location of key infrastructure like bus stops and railway stations, community centres, things like that. But what we really need to know is where people are going and what they're doing. So we can look towards the census to help us with that, where people live, where they work. We can model that into, you know, the typical patterns that people are following for their commute, where the shops are located. So people are going to be going from their homes to the shops. We need that kind of information as well. But then there's the more real-time stuff, which is a count of the traffic, how many cars, bikes, people are passing by specific points in the neighborhood. And in conjunction with the Fingal County Council, we're installing these sensors to collect this anonymous information about numbers of different types of vehicles and people passing points. We can also then collect things like the sound levels, noise levels for noise pollution, collect environmental conditions, so air quality and things like that. That can all feed into creating this model of the area. The other important one is bikes. So we are equipping some bikes with sensors to see where exactly they're traveling, all collected anonymously, not linked to a person, just to see how they're using the current infrastructure that's there and how that might change then when we use the digital twin to modify the area virtually.
And I'm just thinking of my journey in this morning and everyone who was walking, nearly everyone was on their mobile phones. And I'm just wondering, like, are you also able to access people's mobile phones, or can people give you that permission? Because there's no better data gathering unit than a mobile phone in terms of seeing where people are going.
Yeah, the mobile phone really puts the citizen as a sensor, collecting lots of information about the environment and where they're going and what they're doing. It is something we could do. We can't get it directly. Obviously, we would need people's consent to collect that data. But we are collecting similar data in other ways through surveys and asking people how they're using their area and how they may like to see that changed to encourage more active travel.
So you're working with Fingal County Council here in Dublin in the town of Ongar. How far have you got and what exactly is the community there seeing in terms of what you're producing?
So at the moment, we're in the early stage of development. So as part of the Research Ireland Challenge funding, the initial phase is about getting stakeholder feedback and input. What is the problem? What would you like to see? And how can we help you in some way? And so we're processing all that data that we've gotten from our stakeholder engagement. We're looking to work with the community now to see how they would like, not the change in cycling, but this digital twin tool, what they need in the interface to help them explain what they want in the area. So at the stage we're at now is collecting the data and starting to put together this digital twin in conjunction with asking the community, how should it look like? Do you want a button here to be able to add a cycle lane? Do you want to be able to drag and drop bicycle shelters or a bicycle repair location? And where do you want to put that? So asking input about the digital twin interface that they're going to use at this stage.
And is it a case that what the majority wins? So when the community come back and say to you, yeah, I want this, the number of people really matters in terms of everyone saying, yeah, we all want this? Or how do you make a decision basically on the democratic side of it?
Yeah, so it's all about this idea of participatory planning where the people are involved in making the decisions. And that might need a bit of a change in the local authority as to how they view things from the top down, where planners are deciding these things, to some sort of negotiation perhaps with the community about the funds that are available and the desires or the wants and are the needs of the community. But obviously, the more people you get to support your plan or what you want in the area, the more effective that is going to communicate with the local authority, I think. So it could be a case that people propose different plans for their area using the digital twin, and then other people can vote on it. It could be something as simple as that.
Do they then get some kind of architectural simulation of what their village, their town, their suburban area would look like?
So that would be the ideal situation, where our digital twin is a 3D model of the local area, and we can modify what that 3D model looks like. So it starts with the current setup. This is how your community looks. This is it in 3D. This is where all the different pieces that make your community are. Now start modifying that 3D model and changing it and see what happens in terms of running the simulation in the background. I don't know if you're familiar with the game SimCity. Mm. So it was a game I used to play a lot as a kid. And it's where you're designing your ideal city and you're trying to keep citizens happy and manage a budget. It's a similar idea to that. And I know now my kids, for example, are big into Minecraft and they're using that to design things in 3D and build different models. So it's trying to capture people's imagination, I think, and the 3D visualizations of your area will do that.
We've seen some examples in parts of Ireland where the local community has, you know, gone as far as the courts to stop bicycle lanes from happening. So there is a sense that, you know, in some areas they don't want them. Mm-hmm. Is this kind of thing trying to leapfrog over that and get the majority of people to support a different vision?
Yeah, so it's asking the community what they want. So you don't want a bicycle lane here. You know, where is an ideal location to the bicycle lane? For a bicycle lane, and we can run the simulation and show what would happen. Bicycle lane here, we're going to reduce cars on this road by 20%. Bicycle lane going this route, we might reduce cars by 30%. So it also allows citizens to play with the balance between different competing resources for maybe the road network, for example.
And we know how much the population is changing in Ireland, increasing in urban and semi-urban areas. Are you putting all that data in, so you're thinking about 10 years, 20 years down the line, how places like Ongar might change?
Exactly. So for the what if scenarios, and you want to think that far into the future, you need to pull in the data about how that area is going to develop or what the projected population is for that area in the future, because you want your what if scenario to be realistic as well, to ensure that it can be, you know, that the changes will address the future needs of the community. So that's a good point. Yeah.
And how much of this in some ways is a recognition of like the failure in some ways of local democracy, that, you know, going back to the road that suddenly appeared out of nowhere near me, that from a local point of view, local county councils haven't found a way to involve the community enough in where they want to go with their village, with their town, with their city?
Yeah, it's often seen as a black box. The decision is made somewhere by someone to do something, and it's not bringing the citizens with them at the moment. And I think it's not just for cycling infrastructure, but for other things that are happening in local areas. There is a need for the community to be involved. At the moment, the processes maybe aren't there for that, but we see, in our case, the digital twin as a participatory planning tool to kind of, in some way, help address that disconnect. Because there's a tool there where people can talk directly to the local authority and explain what their vision or their idea for the area is. And hopefully there's a channel back then from the local authority to negotiate or explain their rationale for certain decisions. So I think there is a piece missing there. This will address it in some way, hopefully, around the, in our case, cycling infrastructure. But you could imagine how the same kind of tools could be used for other decisions about how money is spent in local areas.
How relevant is what you're doing for areas in rural Ireland? So be it linking villages, smaller villages and towns together through the countryside, yeah, or, you know, vast swathes of rural Ireland where there may not be too many villages, but just individual houses. I mean, is this relevant to them?
So that is a challenge, I suppose. We're focusing on the idea of the neighborhood level, where there's a collective of people living together. There are other research projects that I'm aware of as part of the Research Ireland Challenge that are looking to help these kind of rural communities with transport links. Again, trying to avoid the need for everybody to have a car, but putting transport and buses where people need them and where they're going, you know, rather than just, again, somebody else deciding on the routes. The community can help determine where is the appropriate place for the bus route to go, for example, what their needs are.
I just wonder, like, thinking back during COVID, I know not by any means in all parts of Ireland, but in certain areas, cycle lanes just appeared. You know, they were just put in. There seemed, yeah, to be an opportunity there to put in cycle lanes, and that's what happened. Given the kind of urgency about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and transport sector is what, 21% of our total, so it's a significant amount, is that not the better way where you get action, which is to say, look, we just need these things, and be inspired by the way they did it in the past with roads, just make it happen?
Make it happen. That's needed, yes, but it needs to happen in the right place. I mean, I've seen lots of examples where there's a bicycle lane covering a couple of kilometres, but each side of the bicycle lane, there's nothing for bikes. It's in a random and remote location, for example. So it's about putting things in the right place quickly, but making sure that people use them. And that's where the community aspect and the ability to provide feedback into the decision of where to put these things is needed. And there's no point building this the infrastructure if people aren't going to use it, because it's not linking the right places together, or it doesn't, you know, the bicycle shelter is not secure enough at the train station. Simple things like that can be done quickly, but we need to get the feedback from people about it.
Professor Francesco Pilla is in UCD's School of Architecture, and his work focuses on working with local communities, using technology to act on environmental issues in their local environment. Francesco, is there any city in the world that has solved the problem of sustainable transport by not tackling cars? I mean, in essence, is this all about trying to take cars out of as you say, take them away from the roads and bring in more bikes and bring in more public transport?
Unfortunately, this is a common challenge across many cities in the world. There are many good examples of cities that they did something good about it. But I guess so far, there's not a city that managed to completely solve the problem. You can look at the very fantastic initiatives like the super blocks in Barcelona, or the school streets in Lyon. So there are many of these examples, but most of the times are quite localized. So they are solving the problem in a very specific area. But then if you don't push a lot on behavioral change, so if you don't get the citizens on board, you know, there's not much hope to remove many cars from the road.
And what does it mean to get people on board?
This traffic is kind of a wicked challenge. You know, removing cars from the road is a wicked challenge in the way that, you know, if you want to solve it, you have to propose also alternative way of moving around. So improving to public transport, improving active travel infrastructure. But at the end of the day, you can put all of the infrastructure that you want on the road, but if people don't want to use it, then you're not really tackling the problem. So this is why it's critical to make people, citizens, aware of the challenge and aware of the benefits that they would have, you know, from themselves by tackling the challenge, but also on a broader scale. So, you know, tackling climate change issues and so on and so forth.
What's the best, just to think what the best argument is for someone who has two cars, they don't have any bikes, they don't use public transport. How do you get them to start thinking of not taking their car?
What we are doing, just to get, to start with an example, so maybe it's easier to relate to. In Ungar, we are trying to tackle this challenge by giving people the chance to try electric bikes. You know, most of the time, well, electric bikes are expensive. So most of the time, people don't want to commit the amount of money if they are not sure that these e-bikes are going to, you know, to reduce their cost, to get them around the city in a better way. And people don't really get that feeling. They don't get convinced by looking at an e-bike in a shop for 30 seconds. So what we are doing in Bikehood is, in Ungar, is that we are giving e-bikes to people in the local communities for 2 or 3 months. So they can take them home and use them as their own for that amount of time. And that hopefully give them an experience firsthand on how these e-bikes can be used not just to bring kids to school, but also to go shopping, to go to the park, to go to work, and actually be an effective replacement of the car.
And what did they? This is Ungar in Fingal County Council in Dublin, and this is where your project, you're experimenting with it. What do they say to you? I mean, are they resistant? Do you have to persuade them?
Well, not really. Actually, my main challenge is to take the bikes back, because once they have them for 2-3 months, they don't want to give them back anymore. They want to keep them, and but unfortunately, I have to pass them on to more citizens. This is quite, I mean, at the end of the day, it's good news, because it means that they really like the e-bikes. It means that they can actually see that they can replace many car trips and hopefully convince them to buy one on their own.
I suppose a lot of this, isn't it, is it a failure of imagination? Like, we still think about roads as being a space for cars, and we need to imagine a different sort of fate for roads, which is a space primarily for people who are able to cycle and walk and all the rest. And cars are third on that list, we'll say.
I say it is all about that. It's about reallocating road space to more sustainable modes, but also it is about seeing roads as a space that you can actually enjoy for other activities. You've seen like many walkable streets popping up around Dublin, Blackrock, where they're, instead of giving space to car for moving cars or parking cars, you have like nice little sitting areas, people walking around, and all of a sudden it doesn't become like an awful space full of noise and air pollution, but it becomes an enjoyable space where people can actually socialize and enjoy the city more.
So in, for example, Ungar, where you're working, what are you showing the communities? So you have all this data, you're running these essential simulations, this digital twin idea, where you can show them a different way of getting around. What are they seeing?
Well, basically, the idea behind this digital twin, it's that it's a tool, a piece of technology that, an interactive piece of technology that the local community can use to put forward their ideas, but also to see the impact that their solution would have on the local area. And at the same time, they can also see the impacts of the solution that the public authority is putting forward. I think it is a way to get a better understanding that, some solutions might seem like a good idea, but might have a negative impact on the local area. And I think it's a way to facilitate the conversation between planners and the affected local communities.
I'm just wondering, you know, we have, 5.5 years to reach the carbon emission reduction targets by 2030. Do we have time to wait for people to come around? I mean, isn't the quickest way to get people to start using public transport and walk and bike where they can, just to make it happen, and for the county council to come in and say, look, this is what needs to happen? And we saw a bit of that during COVID, didn't we, in parts of Ireland where suddenly out of the blue cycle lanes popped up and that was it. You know, there wasn't any consultation. It was just a decision to say, this is going to happen. This is the future. Let's just get on with it.
Well, I don't think, to be honest, I don't think that enforcing stuff on people has very good results. You can see it in in previous policies that were implemented in other countries, like traffic restrictions, congestion charges, they always raised a lot of opposition. And at the end of the day, people always found a way to get around them, even during COVID with the people, the movement restriction, people still got around dodging the restriction themselves. So I think if we want to reach this very ambitious target, it is necessary to bring people on board, because at the end of the day, you cannot just tell them you have to use the bus and not use the car. It's not going to happen. You know, they have to understand that there is an higher goal, that they can be part of the change, they can be produce a positive impact themselves. It is something that, improving infrastructure and getting people to use, it has to be something that goes hand in hand. And so you have to improve education, improve awareness about climate issues and many things, So it's not just enough to put down the infrastructure and try to enforce it.
And with the communities that you've worked with, what are they most receptive to? I mean, for example, in the schools, what is the messaging that you're saying to them where you really feel like that's an effective message that will change their minds?
I think the most effective message is that you have to show people that they can have an active role in solving the solution. So they don't have to feel passive about air pollution, about noise pollution, about climate change. But they have to feel that they can be part of a solution with the right tools, and so they can be instrumental in driving the change.
I often think that, I suppose personally, it was only when I had kids that I really became aware of just how dangerous and exhausting it is to be in an urban area with traffic.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, that idea that if you let go of their hand, that the potential is that they could be knocked down.
Yes, I know. Look, I completely agree with you. I have kids myself, and I don't take my eyes off them when I'm walking on the footpath. It's crazy if you think that probably 20 years ago, kids were able to play just outside their doorstep, and now you cannot even let them walk on the footpath because there might be an e-scooter flying by, or cars driving at crazy speeds on the road. So I think that's why I think, it's not just about improving infrastructure, but it's about improving also mindset of people. Because if people keep on driving fast on the road, not paying attention at signal, there's not much you can do about it. So it's critical that people understand that they need to change their behavior, they need to do something themselves about improving safety, reducing pollution, and so on and so forth.
Is this something, you've mentioned anger in urban area. I mean, is it something that can be used, this idea of a digital twin, this idea of inspiring people first before physically changing the area? Is it something that can happen in rural Ireland as well?
I don't see why not. People have to be brought on board, they have to be provided with tools to take part in planning, not just in urban areas, but in suburban, in rural areas, a bit everywhere. Because, at the end of the day, they need to have a voice in their changes that they are going to be done in their local areas in order to be on board with them. So I think that also in rural areas, that would be a way to do that.
And so what is your ultimate vision of success for Bikehood? Is it that you can then take this model of working with communities and go to every village and town in the country, or what?
I think so. I mean, my vision of success is that now at the moment we are looking at, working with people at developing active travel infrastructure. But in the future, we push it also to other type of infrastructure, other challenges. And so basically, bringing people on board and giving them an active role to tackle, many sustainability challenges. So traffic is just one. There are other linked to traffic or tangential to traffic, like pollution, green infrastructure, housing. And so I think it's just an initial step. And then eventually we'll figure out also a way to bring people on board in tackling other challenges in a similar framework.
And without being too grand about it, I just wonder, what does it say about the status of local democracy in Ireland? That in some ways the local county councils, as far as I know, aren't using this, and should they be using this as a way to make sure that everyone has an equal voice in how their area is developed?
You'd be surprised. You're right. They are not currently using it, but they are quite keen to get on board. So we are getting a lot of support from Fingal County Council that is completely on board. We got interest also from other local authorities across Ireland. So I think it's not that they don't want to do it that way. It's that at the moment there are not suitable tools to do it that way.
I'm just thinking, planning at the moment is you go into your local county council office, they might have, I don't know, some sort of visualization of what their plans are for a new road or a new cycle lane. It's all very static. It's hard for your imagination to really understand what it is that they've got planned.
Yes, at the moment it's all done with the technical drawings, which, to be honest, look, I'm an engineer as a background, but sometimes I struggle to make sense of those technical drawings myself. So I can see that's why we came up with this idea, because, I mean, if people, even technical people, struggle with those technical drawings, I can imagine that people with less technical skills, they can hardly make sense of them. So I think an interactive tool would actually bridge this gap and get people to understand better what is going to happen in their area, and actually allow them to come up, with alternative solutions, to come up with alternative ideas.
We have these carbon emission reduction targets 5.5 years away to 2030. The pressure is on time-wise to get the transport sector, which is about, 21% of all greenhouse gas emissions in Ireland, to get that down. What do you do if people just go, that's great, that's interesting, not for me, and get back in their car?
Well, of course, you cannot expect to deliver all the climate targets with a single little project. That would be probably utopian. I think bycode is part of a solution, but of course it has to come with other solutions proposed by the local authorities or ongoing. So improved bus connectivity, improved the railway system. So yes, I'm not so crazy to expect that I'm going to deliver all the climate target with my own project. But I do believe that, yes, those 50% people that won't use the car coming out of bycode will be part of that reaching the climate target. And so if we can replicate it in many areas, it will actually contribute to this, to reaching the target themselves. But as I said, it cannot be just the only solution. I'm not expecting that delivering bikes to people will suit all the people that I'm interacting with. So as part of bycode, we are looking into different what we call behavioral nudging interventions. So the bikes is one of the behavioral nudging interventions that we are testing now, but we will deploy more in 2025. So we look at different ways, if there is a way that with some financial incentives, so reduced tickets, we can get more people on the bus or on the trains. We look at different kind of nudging solution.
Do we need nudges or do we need a shove? You know, I'm just thinking, like me, and I mean, I drive and I cycle and I walk. When it's wet and cold, I get in my car. Now, there's no amount of nudging that's going to stop me from doing that. I just don't want to get wet and I don't want to cycle in the rain. So do I need a shove? And do I need to be told, no, I'm sorry, whatever you think, whatever you want to do, that's in the past. We're just not going to let you do it anymore. That's really hard. It's why climate action is so hard. But at the end of the day, do we have time to be nudging people? Do we have time, by 2030, 5.5 years is a very short period of time where we really need those emissions to come down, whether we like it or not?
Well, talking about cultural resistance, maybe I can answer your question with another question. Have you seen any shoving working in Ireland?
Well, I suppose, people would argue that's where maybe tax policy comes in. That's where, just deciding, listen, this road is now one way. We've seen that multiple times. It really annoys everyone. But, people shrug their shoulders and say, OK, we're just going to have to go with it. There's a cycle lane there. So be it. I mean, we did see during COVID quite a significant change in parts of Ireland when it came to cycle lane infrastructure and the rerouting of cars. And there was resistance. But at the end of the day, do we have much choice?
Well, I see your point, but just if you start shoving, I think you go into politics, because then one party will be shoving, it will lose support, and then the shoving will be gone after 1 year. So I don't think it's the way to go, to be honest. And I can tell you also about some examples about this, like. Again, using the super blocks in Barcelona as an example, it was done by shoving, then lost a political support, and now they are decommissioning some super blocks starting from next year. So I don't think it is the way to go. And you have to work with people to reduce opposition. I do agree with you. This seems to be, it could be a time that takes, it could be a process that takes a lot of time, and we don't have much time. So something needs to be done. But I think it has to be done hand in hand with local communities, trying to bring them on board, improve communication, improve awareness, starting with activities in schools, and then bring people on board with more radical changes like the one that they're doing as part of BosConnect. Every little counts, to be honest. And I think the positive note is that if every single person does something about it, so either walking to school or getting better recycling, it doesn't seem much. But then if you multiply it by 5 million people, then that's when you see the change. And I think that's the positive message, that as little as you want to do, it always gives an improvement, So walk to school, use less the car if you don't need to, use the bike, do better recycling. All those things help.
Many thanks to Gavin McArdle and Francesco Pilla. For more, go to rte.ie/brainstorm, and you can find Brainstorm in all the usual social places. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode, and subscribe to Brainstorm wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Ella McSweeney. Until next time.
Brainstorm is produced by Adrian Carty, researched with by Hazel O'Leary, and recorded by Shane Dempsey at Collaborative Studios. For RTE Brainstorm, thanks to Jim Carroll, Aoife Ryan Christensen and Neil Lane. The RTE Brainstorm podcast is proudly supported by Research Ireland.